So it's still August 26th, and this is the second part of the morning on Masechet Brachot, Perek Dalet, Mishnah Hey and Mishnah Vav. So, just reading to the Mishnah first, Mishnah Hey and then Mishnah Vav. Haya rochev al hachamor, yered. He was riding on the donkey, yered. He should get down. V'meino yichol lired, and if he's unable to come down, lired, Yechazirat panav, he should turn his face. V'meino yichol achzirat panav, and if he cannot turn his face, yechavenet libo, keneged beit kodesh hakodeshim, he should intend his heart towards the house of the Holy of Holies, the place of the Holy of Holies. So this Mishnah is clearly written in truncated and telegraph fashion. It really doesn't tell you a lot that you have to know. We have to assume it. So let's fill in all the details. When it says at the beginning, Haya ruchev al hachamor, he was riding on a donkey, Yered should come down. Obviously, doesn't mean in any situation which you're on a donkey, you have to come down. It means only in the certain situation. What situation?
Time for Shema. Shema Nesrei.
Right.
Shema
Bo. Right. Only if you have to daven. Which either means that the time for the Shema Nesrei has come, and you know that you won't have finished your journey by the time will end, so you want to say Shema Nesrei. Or you're on the donkey, and the time is about to end. So you have to say it right now. So that's obviously the situation. In order to say Shema Nesrei, the halacha is Yered. He should come down. Now there's other things you have to do once you come down that are implied by the Mishnah but aren't stated specifically. What other things that you have to do when you Yered are implied by the Mishnah but not stated here specifically?
Face the right direction.
Really? Right. What it really means to say, Haya ruchev al hachamor Yered, yachazir et panav, v'yichaven et libo, Keneged Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim. It really means to say three things, but it doesn't say them at the beginning, only it unfolds them gradually. But there's three things. Yered, number two, Yachzir et Panav, number three, Yechaven et Libo, Keneged Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim. And imeino yichol lired, if you can't come down, then Yachzir et Panav, but not just Yachzir et Panav, it also come up, of course, Yechaven et Libo. So if you can't do the first of the three, then do the other two. And if you can't do the first two, which is the last case, v'imeino yichol lachzir et panav, which means if you can't yered, can't come down, and also can't turn to any direction, then at least do the last of the three, yichaven et libo keneged beit kodesh kodeshim. That seems to be what the Mishnah is saying. Does anyone disagree?
Yeah. No, that's all right.
Because it's really written in a cryptic form, but that seems to be what it means. So now I have to figure out a little bit more. So if we go to the questions, we already did question one, which is the background of when you have to yired. Like we said, it's when you have to daven, either because the time has just come or the time is about to pass. That's question one of the question sheet. Number two asks us, under what conditions, for what reason, might it be that when are you on a donkey and you can't get down? I can think of at least three cases that it might be talking about. It's going to be important to distinguish between them, perhaps. So, for those with riding experience on donkeys or on caravans, why couldn't you get down from a donkey?
You're on the donkey high five. Intersection over here.
Uh-huh. And the traffic jam.
Yeah.
Dangerous.
Dangerous location.
A dangerous location. Okay.
The accident, make an accident or something like
okay,
that.
Okay, so...
Nobody to hold the donkey for him.
Ah, that's another. So it might be, like Mr. Gallis said, that you can get down, but once you get down, it won't be helpful because no one to hold the donkey for you. Yeah. That could be what's included. No yichol lired. Now, in its practical terms, you could get down, but it won't be helpful because there's no one to hold the donkey or there's no place of time to. That's situation number one.
Another one, I don't know if this is stretching it, but... There's Shabbos, there's Yom Tov coming.
And you won't get where you're going in time.
If I put my big journey at risk, now.
Okay. So that's just like basically the high five, in the sense that you have to keep on a certain schedule.
Yeah.
And it very well could be, I think this was a common situation in those days, that you're in a caravan, a donkey caravan, and if you slow down, get off the donkey, you'll... miss the caravan and you'll be stuck in the donkey high five in the middle of the desert or you won't get to where you're going before Shabbat, or you won't get there at all because you'll be attacked by wild robbers and bandits. So that's situation number two, in which you can't get down. Another situation might be that you could get down, but you'll be so tarud, you'll be so preoccupied by the fact that you're having to delay your journey that you won't have kavanah for tefillah. And that's, let's say, a third type of situation, which eino yechol lered. The first situation we said was there's no one to hold the donkey if you come down. Yeah. The second is that you have to stay up with the caravan. And number three is that you'd be so tarud that it wouldn't help. So the first two situations are basically physical impediments. There's no one to hold the donkey, you have to stay up with the caravan. The third is a spiritual impediment or a mental impediment that everything else is fine, but it wouldn't help to get off and stop because you would be so tarud that you wouldn't be able to yichaven et livo.
If you're watching your road, you cannot concentrate, but it's a healer.
No, that's a little bit different, Mr. Gala. I'm saying if you get down, you couldn't concentrate because you're perturbed by having to slow down your journey.
You down, yeah.
And you're saying if you stay on the donkey, you might not be able to yichaven et livo. That's also true. We'll get into that a little bit later.
Argument that you're on an LL flight.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in charge of nothing but whether I'm stationary. My conveyance is not. My chamor is busy moving.
Mm-hmm.
It's not under my control.
Ilal might be offended, by the way.
We had an argument about whether that's an appropriate place for tefillah for a minyan.
There's two different questions, for tefillah and then for a minyan.
Okay. But I'm not sure that there is a difference in my mind, but the argument is, it's a conveyance, it's a moving location, it's not under my control. Whether I say my tefillah, whether I face Yerushalayim, Beit HaMikdash, or not, the plane's going to continue.
I'd say it's more like the spina, or the karon, or the asta. If the donkey is in a certain sense under your control, but the spina, or the karon, or the asta, certainly not. Let's wait 2 seconds till we get there.
All right.
Okay, but of course you're right on track. So, I just wanted to go to question three now and point out that the Mishnah could have said something different than what it says. It says, Haya rucheb al chamor yered. And then it gives you, of course, a situation. So if you can't yered, what do you do? But the Mishnah could have said something else when it says, Eino yechol yered, it says, Yachzir et panav. It could have said, for example, it could have said, if you can't fulfill these conditions, then don't daven. Could have said that, right? It could have said you have to do tashlumim. You can't daven at this point, daven some other time. Or it could have said if you can't get down from the donkey, get down anyway. There's no one to hold the donkey, so hold it yourself. You're going to miss the caravan, so what? In other words, to summarize, it could have said you have to daven on the ground in any case, but it didn't say that. Or it could have said you can't daven at all. I'm just pointing out that the flexibility of this Mishnah is not the only possibility. Okay. Number four. Does machzir et panav describe a physical state or a mental spiritual one? That's easy, right? What's the answer? Everyone's right. Mm-hmm. It's just so simple, no one wants the answer, right? Obviously it describes a physical state. Whereas what it says later in question 8, does Yechaven et Libo describe a physical and mental state there? It's a mental state. In other words, this Mishnah knows to distinguish between physical and mental states, and it has different vocabulary, different terminology for physical and mental states. That's going to be important for later when we see other sources that don't seem to want to distinguish between physical and mental states. But this Mishnah is willing to and has the vocabulary to do so. Okay. So then we get to question 5. Towards where does one machzir et panav? And goodness gracious, the Mishnah doesn't say. It says you should turn your face to where? It doesn't say.
So why should this be different from the rest of the context, the rest of the pasuk? Keneged beit kodesh kodeshim.
That's what we have to say. We have to say that even though the Mishnah seems to mention Keneged Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim only in the context of Yechaven et Libo, it apparently means it also in the context of Yechzir et Panav. It's saving words. Like just like we said that when it says the beginning, Hayaru Hevel Chamor Yered, that also implies Yechzirat Panav, and also implies Yechavenet Libo. And when it says Imino Yechol Lered Yechzirat Panav, so that also implies Yechavenet Libo. In other words, it saves words and only says what it needs to say, the minimum, but always implies other things that are listed elsewhere in the Mishnah. So the same thing goes for the words Kineged Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim. Those words also apply above. What do I mean? I mean when it says Hayaru Chival HaChamor Yered, implying Yechzirat Panav Kineged Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim V'Yechavenet Libo Kineged Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim V'Mino Yechol Lered Yechzirat Panav Kineged Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim V'Yechavenet Libo Kineged Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim. All those words apparently are implied, but they're not stated except at the end. So even though the Mishnah knows the distinguish between Kavanat HaLev and Hachzarat Panim, they're two different phrases, one physical, one spiritual, they're both intended towards the same thing, which is Kineged Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim.
The only thing I didn't understand, he had said, some texts have Kodshei instead of Kodesh.
Okay, I don't think that...
Why does it say Kodshei? There's only one Kodesh HaKodeshim.
It's just a different expression for the Kodesh HaKodeshim. It's no,
we don't have
no difference.
Two,
you're right.
Two Kodesh HaKodeshim, only
we
one.
Don't. We don't.
That's the only place where the Kohen Gadol goes in there, on Yom Kippur only.
Correct. That's 100%.
That's the Kodesh HaKodesh.
So here, we actually come face to face with what seems to be an astounding chidush of this Mishnah. Is there anyone sitting on this table that the last time they daven Shmon Asrei thought to face not only your face but also your heart towards Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim? Right when we daven, we face the east. Why? Because we're facing Eretz Yisrael, facing Yerushalayim, facing Har HaBayit, facing Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim. But where do you face your heart to? According to this Mishnah, you face your heart to the same place you face your face.
Yeah.
Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim. I assume that most people around this table usually try to face the hearts to...
Yerushalayim.
Your heart, not your face. Your face is towards Yerushalayim. Where is your heart towards?
Hashem.
Hashem.
This Mishnah doesn't mention HaKodesh Baruch Hu at all. We'll get to that. But this Mishnah seems to say, just like you face your face, your physical body,
right,
towards Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim, your heart should be there also, which means that what you're imagining while you're davening, if you imagine anything besides the baseball game, but if you imagine anything, it's not the greatness of Kodesh Baruch Hu, it's the scene of Hakrivat Korbanot, of offering Korbanot in Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim. That's what you're supposed to be thinking of, not God. I'm exaggerating a bit to make it very clear that this Mishnah seems to be advocating a very, very specific understanding of what tefillah is. You hear what I'm saying?
Tefillah is more important than korbanot.
No. Tefillah is, in a certain sense, korbanot.
It
takes the place. Right? That reminds us of what we learned in the Agadah last year, that tefillot keneged avot tiknum, or tefillot keneged Korbanot Tiknum, remember the other argument? And the approach that says that tefillah is a replacement for korbanot seems to be reflected in this Mishnah. Because the Mishnah could have said something different. It could have said that yechazir panav keneged beit kodesh hakodeshim v'yechaven et libo keneged, it could have said hashchina, but it doesn't say that. So, at least al panav, on the surface of things, this Mishnah seems to take the approach that the essence of tefillah is about korbanot, and that's what your face and your heart should be directed to and thinking about and focused on. Isn't that like interesting or surprising?
Question.
Yeah.
Is the Kodesh HaKodeshim where the actual korbanot?
Ooh, good question. Ooh.
Thank you very much.
Oh,
thank you.
Of course, Steve, in a very, very humble way, said it in a question, but actually it's a criticism, it's a kusha. because the korbanot are not taking place in Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim. They're taking place in the Azara. Let me think about that a second.
Azara specifically is?
The courtyard.
Okay. Any more than that, 100 meters away, it doesn't really matter. It's more or less the same thing, but specifically, yeah. They're actually the same. Which is quite possibly why it's not talking about korbanot at all. But it's simply an historical context of the question of what do you do after Beit Mikdash is destroyed. And this Mishnah seems to be saying, no, we still remember the Beit Mikdash.
I like that.
Whereas there are other positions at the time who said, no, Beit Mikdash is gone, we go on, we move on to something else. It's over. And there's a lot of, quasi-political stuff going on here, whether we focus on Beit Mikdash, we don't focus on Beit Mikdash. And this Mishnah seems to be saying, yes, even though it's gone, we still continue. Think about it.
Okay, so it could be you have to strike what I said about the korbanot, but what I said about the lack of mention of Shekhinah, right, is still true. There's no mention of Shekhinah, and the focus of tefillah is on the Beit Hamikdash, which perhaps means that we have to take a nuanced approach, perhaps, that it means focus on God through Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim. It's not perhaps the Korbanot like I was saying. It's a Kodesh Baruch Hu, but it's all through Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim. Even after the temple is destroyed, the only path, the only conduit to God, according to the Mishnah, is through Yushalayim and the Mikdash and the Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim.
The argument you can make, just to wrap that up, the argument you can make is as long as I'm in transit, as long as the context of the discussion is in transit, I can't make it granular enough to say Kodesh HaKodeshim, Azara, wherever. I am far enough away, I'm moving at the same time. Beit HaMikdash is as good as it's going to get.
I didn't understand what you're saying.
Saved by the bell. He just got home. Turning my heart towards God is the same thing as turning toward the Beit HaMikdash, in effect, rather than being granular where in the Beit HaMikdash.
Being grand.
Fine-grained.
Fine-tuned.
Fine-grained. Where, to what I'm facing, my heart is facing. No.
Anyone want to help me out?
Am I equally opaque to everybody? So then it's me.
Well, so you're saying that it's the ideal would be to be directed towards God, but because you're traveling, you can't get that level of kavanah. So think about it more mechanically, in a sense.
To a metaphorical. He's desperate to tell me he's home. Excuse me.
Okay.
Yes.
Shekhinah actually could mean a lot of things, because God is everywhere. God is in every synagogue, in every place where you pray. God is all around.
Mm-hmm.
So it does not cover just Kodesh HaKodesh. Shekhinah could covers God. You turn your mind to God, and God is everywhere. That doesn't mean. So I like the better explanation here in the Mishnah, where it says Kodesh HaKodeshim, because we have to turn towards east, to the east, to Mishnah, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the Shekhinah, where it says over there, we should concentrate ourselves to the Shekhinah. Shekhinah is everywhere. God is everywhere. You don't necessarily have to turn to the Mizrah.
So why do we? So why does this Mishnah emphasize?
The Mishnah, I agree with the Mishnah better than with the Braisa, where it says Shekhinah.
No, so you mean you agree with the Rambam
against
the Mishnah?
Against the Mishnah.
Okay, but the Rambam doesn't have power to disagree with the Mishnah. We'll have to figure out where the Rambam got it from. But in the meanwhile, the Mishnah is problematic.
Actually, the Shekhinah, you can turn to God everywhere. We turn to God every minute of the day for prayers.
So anyway, we certainly have established that this Mishnah has some type of specific worldview that you don't turn to God in any direction, but you turn to God through
to the Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim. Or that prayer.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go on. Let's see what else I asked here. That's not that important. So in question 9, I'll just tell what I meant when I wrote question 9, because basically we've talked about it already. In question 9, when I said, in what two ways could we understand the meaning and significance of Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim, I meant what we've discussed here.
Yeah.
Does it mean specifically and only what it says, Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim, or does it mean Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim as a conduit towards the Shekhinah? So if it only means Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim and nothing more, it's kind of hard to understand. If it means for a conduit towards the Shekhinah, we understand, and we see that we're asked to relate to Kodesh Baruch Hu only through... But say something?
No.
I think it's... Only through the Mikdash. Okay. In reference to the answers to the previous question, is there any evidence within the Mishnah for one understanding over the other? Do you think there is? I mean, okay.
It seems to be focusing on the physical. Focusing on the physical Beit Mikdash.
Yeah, it does seem to be.
Yeah. Okay, like before, it's almost like a little Zionist mission here.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that the Kavanat Lev stops there.
Not necessarily.
But it doesn't say the word Shekhinah, right? If we add, it's a conduit for God, we're really adding things that aren't written here. Right? It could have mentioned Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim and from there to the Shekhinah, but it doesn't say that. So we have a lot to think about, right? It is a question that is going to be dealt with the commentators that we'll later see. Any other questions that we wanted to talk about? Let's see. We have that we talked about. That basically know. Yeah, let's talk about questions 12, 13, and then 12 and 13. What three directives do we learn from this Mishnah concerning prayer under normal circumstances? That's pretty easy.
Stop what you're doing.
Stop what you're doing, right, and stand.
Stand facing east,
right.
Emotionally with your heart and with your face.
Yeah, right. And of course, the Mishnah could have stated those three things in that direct fashion, but it didn't. It stated them in this rather roundabout fashion. So that brings us to question 14, or 13. What does the Mishnah gain by presenting these three directives in the fashion that it does? If we had just had a Mishnah that said what Martin said, as opposed to this Mishnah, what more do we know from the way that this Mishnah phrased it?
Can't do all, do what you can.
Right. Right?
Succinct enough.
Right. What the Mishnah taught us is the flexibility principle. That these are not hard and fast rules, that they're just as far as your ability. And that's certainly an important chidush. Because otherwise we could have said, if I'm on a plane, well, you can't daven. If I'm on a ship on a bunkie and I can't down, I can't daven. I can't feel the condition, so nothing doing. This says no. You do what you can. Okay. That brings us to Mishnah Vav. So Mishnah Vav reads, Haya Yoshev B'Sfina, O V'Charon, O V'Astai, who's sitting in a ship or in a wagon or in a raft, Yechaven et Libo Keneged Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim. And this Mishnah assumes that you can't Yered, and you can't Yechzir et Panav. All you can do is Yechaven et Libo. Right? And had we wanted to combine Mishnah Hin, Mishnah Vav, we would have said, Haya Rucheva L'Chamor Yered. V'im eino yechol yered yachzir et panav. V'im eino yechol yachzir et panav. Oh, im yoshev v'sfina v'karon v'asta, Yichaven et libo keneged Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim. In other words, the Mishnah Vav relates to the last third of Mishnah Hay. It's a situation of you can't get down and you can't machziot panav. And David brought up in Charuta, well, why can't you machziot panav in a spina? So David's assuming that spinot usually go in the same direction, right?
At least as much as a donkey.
At least as much as a donkey. The only answer I can give to that is that a donkey you have control over, and a spina you don't have control over. In other words, had it said concerning spina yachziot panav, then would be create a situation in which you're in the spina, you machziot panav, the spina moves, so you move. The spina moves, so you move. You're always trying to keep your
it's direction. It's a reasonable way to divide into two mishnayot. One, I have control over my situation. The other is, to a large degree, I don't.
And I think when you don't have control, you don't even have to make an effort to machziot panav. It would cause too much, perhaps, tirda, too much, trouble to think always of the direction we're in the spina, because it might move.
Nafkamina, for a plane.
For a plane.
You have control, but you're always playing the same direction. So would you face...
But...
Like you have no control, but pretty much you're going in the same direction.
Well, once I make a decision which way I'm going to face, every logical thought is you continue that for the duration of your tefillah.
That's not what it says.
So David's saying, in a plane, do you make an effort to face in the right direction or not? Is it like a spina in the sense you don't have control? Or is it not like a spina? Because in a spina you don't have control, but also it might change its direction. A plane doesn't change its direction.
A plane may not change its direction, but, you know, it's likely to, much more than a ship. But I can't see the logic in changing. And I'm worrying... Okay. The worry about holding on to the reins of the donkey is, to my mind, the same category of worrying about whether your plane is in fact facing the same direction, meaning you are changing direction. That, to me, is the same worry. Okay, I've lost everybody yet again.
You're afraid your plane goes to hijack or what?
No. Okay. Here's the stupid example. Here's the really stupid example. I'm in O'Hare going in circles for 3 hours. Time to dive on that one.
Okay, that's a sphena.
That's a sphena, but I'm going in circles.
That's what he's saying, because
you're over the North Atlantic, you know, and you can be over the North Atlantic for the next 6 hours. Chances of you changing direction is not likely.
Not very likely whatsoever, but, you know, my thought is once I am, for the duration of my short tefillah, once I make a decision which way I'm going to face, that's it and that's that.
Well, but also, I mean, does this say you should not make any effort? Supposing you're on a plane, do I say I'm exempt from making any effort at all because planes could be circling around O'Hare, or I should try to do as much as I can because I may be flying over the North Atlantic?
So if the plane is like a spina, if it is, then the answer is that you don't make an effort. You only yichaven et libo.
Yeah. So even if you could make a effort and get it right, because you're headed in one direction, you don't even bother.
That's what I would think.
I know people have said, like, you always face the front of the plane. I don't like, you know, towards the pilot, just give him all the
help him.
that could be the source for it.
Yeah. Okay, let's see what else we have here. We did question 14. No, we didn't. Yes, we did. We did 14. 15. Did that. So we did all the questions, 14, 15, and 16. We go to the next source. Is it okay to go to the next source? Okay. The next source is the Rambam that Mr. Galler was already referring to. And the Rambam is photostated in the booklet of sources, not on the page 1 and not on page 2, but rather on page 3. And this is the Rambam, as you can see, in the Mishneh Torah, Sefer Ahava, which is the second of 14 books of the Mishneh Torah, Hilchot Tefillah, Perek Dalid, Halacha Tet Zayin. And the Rambam actually says something amazing. We know that the Rambam here is writing a a book of halakha, which is of course based on the halachic sources from the Torah and from the Mishnah and from the Gemara. He's supposed to be, and he is, commenting upon, explaining, and codifying the sources he has, and not giving, of course, his own opinion. What does he say? Ketzad hi hakavana. What is kavana? And we're talking about tefillah. Sheyifaneh et libo. That he will empty his heart, mikol hamakshavot, of all thoughts, v'yiretzmo, and see himself, picture himself, imagine himself, ki'ilu hu omed lifnei shechina, as if he is standing before the Shechina. And we all say, how could the Rambam say that? That's not what he's supposed to write. What is Rambam supposed to write, according to our Mishnah? That he should see himself, ki'ilu hu omed lifnei beit kodesh kodeshim. Where does the Rambam get Shechina from? So we have two possibilities. Either Rambam is giving us an interpretation of our Mishnah, and we'll have to go back to the drawing board and figure out how he's interpreting it, or he's basing himself on a different source we haven't seen yet. Then we have to say there are conflicting sources in the Talmudic literature, one that holds you face your heart towards the Shechina, and the other is that you face your heart towards Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim. So again, either the Rambam is a different source, or he's interpreting our source in a fashion that we hinted to 5 minutes ago. What do I mean? That when it says that you face your heart towards Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim, it means as a conduit for Shechina. But it's still a little bit difficult. And the Rambam should have said, feel as if you're standing in front of the Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim as a conduit for Shechina. Why didn't he say that? So this issue bothers the Lechem Mishneh, who's one of the many, many, many commentators on the Rambam, and I photostudied his words right below, and we'll see what he says. The Lechem Mishneh says, "Va'af al pi." Everyone have the place? Mm-hmm. Yes. "Af al pi." Sheva Mishnah amru, quote, "Yechaven et libo keneged Beit Kodesh Kodeshim," end quote. Right. "Af al pi" means even though, and of course he's introducing now a tension, a problem. He's bothered. The Rambam says one thing, even though the Mishnah says another thing. Ketav Rabbeinu, our rabbi, meaning the Rambam, wrote, Keneged the Shechina, he wrote, quote, Keneged the Shechina, towards the Shechina, Mishum Dehuzal, because he, may his memory be a blessing, Mefaresh explains, Beferusha Mishnah, his understanding of the Mishnah, Shema Shamar, quote, Keneged Beit Kodesh Kodeshim, that what the Mishnah said when it meant, or it meant what it said, when it said Beit Kodesh Kodeshim, or Tzilamat meant to say, Shehayalo kavana bitfilato, that he should have intention, kavana nistfila, v'yireelo, it should seem to him, or yiralo, ke'ilu omed lifnei Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim. It should seem to him as if he's standing in front of the Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim. V'imkein, hainu ma shamai, chavenet libo, keneged ha-shkina. And if so, that's what it says in the Rambam, that he should face his heart or focus his heart on Keneged Hashchina. And if you look at the Lechem Mishneh one time, two times, three times, you ask again and again, again, what did he say? What did he say? I didn't say anything. How is he explaining? How is he reconciling the Rambam with the Mishnah? And it's really very subtle what he's saying as far as I understand. He's saying that when the Mishnah said, you should focus your heart on the Kodesh HaKodeshim, it didn't mean you should focus your heart on the Kodesh HaKodeshim. It meant you should have kavana in the same level of intensity as if you were standing in front of the Kodesh HaKodeshim. I'll say it again what I mean in different terms, that the Lechem Mishneh claims that the Rambam reads the Mishnah as if the matter of Kavanah towards Kodesh Kodeshim is not a description of the quality of the Kavanah, but rather the quantity of the Kavanah. You should have as much Kavanah as if you were standing in front of the Kodesh Kodeshim, but that doesn't describe the quality of the Kavanah, but just its intensity, just its quantity. Now there's the Rambam.
It's
quantity. It's intensity. But not what type of Kavanah it is, but just its level. The Rambam read the Mishnah as if the Mishnah said, have Kavanah as if you are so inspired, it's as if you're in front of the Kodesh HaKodeshim. That's the level of Kavanah. But what type of Kavanah? It doesn't say what type of Kavanah. Which should be the content of the Kavanah. The Mishnah doesn't say according to the Lechem Mishnah. The Rambam said, of course I know what type of Kavanah. It should be Kavanah for God. That's simple. That's the claim of the Lechem Mishnah. Is it a good claim? Is it a really good way of reading the Mishnah, possibly a plausible way? I'll leave that for us to decide. I'm not sure it is.
Is that really what Lechem Mishnah is saying? That's the question.
That's my guess. If you want a different guess,
My guess, my reading of it, and it's saying it is very difficult. He seems to be saying two things simultaneously, contradictory things. And it says here, Mishnah. He says here, what is that? Mefirush Mishnah. Keneged Beit Kodeshim. Rotze lomar. Okay, so what is he trying to say? Shehaya lo chavana b'tfilato, shir'eh lo ki'ilu omeh lifnei Beit Kodesh Kodeshim.
No, you actually added a letter.
Which is two different things. Where?
Shehaya lo chavana b'tfilato.
Ve.
Not she. I heard you say she.
No. Ve. Ve yir'eh lo. That's the point. If it said she, then I'd understand it. He's saying one thing. But the there means he has two different things here.
And exactly.
And he seems to be saying, again, is the point here that he should have Kavanah, or is he trying to say that he should see himself as in front of Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim? The only way you could possibly, maybe there was a Freudian slip before what I was saying, because the only way you could possibly say he's really saying one thing is if you, instead of the there, you put a colon. Shelo Kavanah b'tfilato, that is his kavanah. And I'm wondering if he's not trying to fudge the Rambam a little bit and saying, well, Rambam says Shechinah, he really means Kodesh HaKodeshim. And the Shechinah is where Beit Kodesh is. I mean, Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim is where the Shechinah Shochenet, which where the Shechinah is. It's the symbolic representation of the Shechinah. So when Rambam is saying Beit the Shechinah, it means base Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim. And I'm wondering if he's trying to fudge the Rambam and saying Rambam is really saying what the Mishnah is saying, just saying different words. And that maybe, you know, we understand the Rambam differently. I mean, the obvious reading is the Rambam differently, and we read here. Maybe we're reading into Lechem Mishnah what is really not there. And my feeling is, and I may be wrong here, my feeling he's trying to bring the Rambam back to the Mishnah. He's uncomfortable.
That's true.
Bring it back in the sense of saying that trying to bring it back to the Pshat of the Mishnah. So the Rambam is talking about Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim. He's not talking about anything else besides Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim. Otherwise he seems to be contradicting himself. And because of the weather, I mean, it's.
Well, when he says Rotzilomar Shaya lo kavanah betfila, in other words, when the Mishnah says you should face Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim, you should face your heart, all it really means to say you should have kavanah.
No, Rotzilomar. It's talking about Mishnah
Shahaya means
Kavanah b'shvilato. What he's trying to do is now take the Rambam and say the Rambam is really saying what Mishnah is saying.
But it's explaining what the Mishnah means is when it says Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim, all it really means to say is Shetelo Kavanah. It's saying that you should have Kavanah as if you're in front of Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim, or it really means says you should have Kavanah.
It doesn't say as if anywhere. He didn't say as if. He doesn't use the word as if anywhere.
Shaya Shetilo Kavanah Betfila. The intention of the Mishnah is not to tell you the type of Kavanah, but just that you should have Kavanah.
You should have Kavanah, and what is the essence of the Kavanah?
The Yireelo Kilo Medlifnei Beit Kodesh. What it means to say is that's the intensity of the Kavanah, but that's not the essence of the Kavanah.
I see how you're reading. I see how you're reading it. I was looking at it another way to say that is the essence of the Kavanah. Isn't that of the Kavanah is you should have the Kavanah of standing there.
Yeah, but then you're claiming that he's really reading the Rambam in a very...
He's in the same way as the Rambam, at least the Pshat of the Rambam the Pshat of the Rambam is different than the Pshat of the Mishnah. The Rambam seems to be trying to pull something out of the Mishnah which he wants, which isn't annotationally there. And the Mishnah is trying to pull the Rambam back a little bit and saying, let's stick to the text. And when he says kidomesh shechinah, the shechinah is again simply a euphemism or a different way for saying kodesh kodeshim.
Yeah, I think that's something very difficult to say.
But
what is clear here is that there's a problem, right? Mm-hmm. It's really a problem, and what the Lechem Mishnah didn't at all envision is the possibility that the Rambam is arguing against the Mishnah, because he's based on a different source, and that's the direction I'd like to go, and we won't get to it today, but we'll see there are other sources that don't say that you should have kavanat alev towards Kodesh HaKodeshim. The Kodesh HaKodeshim, as far as is the matter of the body, the direction you face in, but your heart should be towards the Shekhinah. And the Rambam has a source for that, as we'll see next week. Okay, so we have a problem. Let's go on to more commentators. Let's go on to the Tosfot Anshei Shem that I photostated someplace here, on the same page actually. The Tosfot Anshei Shem, I just want you to know, is an Acharon, not a Rishon, in other words, from the late medieval and early modern period. The fact that it's called Tosfot does not mean there's any connection to the famous Tosfot that are printed on the side of the page of Gemara. This is an Acharon, I don't remember his name. And it's a commentary not on the Gemara, but on the Mishnah. And he says something very, very straightforward. By the way, I just want to tell you, I blew this up like four times. It was really, really, really small.
Thank you, I'm middle-aged, so.
V'mishnatenu tenan v'hedya. In our Mishnah, we learned explicitly, quote, v'im, and then an abbreviation, eino yachol, lachzir et panav, Yichaven libo keneged beit kodesh hakodeshim, end quote. So he's pointing out that the Mishnah says explicitly that you should intend your heart towards the beit kodesh hakodeshim. Alma, and the word alma means therefore it turns out. In other words, it's a logical deduction from here. Delav linyan hachzarat panim levad, that it's not for the matter of turning your body exclusively, ela gam linyana makshava b'kavana, but it's also a matter of the thought and the he says the hachven, the kavana, shayach keneged beit kodesh hakodeshim. Also, the matter of the thought and the attention, it's connected to quote keneged beit kodesh hakodeshim. So all these things pointing out what's very obvious, but might be to us very problematic. That indeed the Mishnah says it's not just the direction of the body, it's also the direction of the soul, is to Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim. And the Rambam, in some sense, was fudging it, even either in a way of interpreting our Mishnah, or like I said, a different source. But the Tosfot Anshei Shem says very explicitly, no, it's all a matter of Kodesh HaKodeshim. And when you daven, you should have in mind nothing but, apparently nothing but, the Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim. So I guess we have time for one more source before we go. So let's see, what were we going to bring here? The Masechet Brachot. Did anyone get to the next source?
No.
No. You guys got to a little bit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Just the first page of the booklet is Masechet Brachot. Which is simply, of course, a quote from our Mishnah. Now we're bringing a brayta that's going to deal with the Mishnah in some sense or another. It's related to the Mishnah. So we see that this brayta is our Mishnah, but it's more explicit. It tells you what we had to figure out ourselves in the Mishnah, that it higiyaz man tfila, arrived at the time of tfila. Im yesh lo mishi yochaz et chamoro, yired lamat tavit pelel. Vim lav, Yeshev b'mkomo v'itpelel. Translation, if he has someone who can hold the reins of the donkey, he'll come down and daven. If not, he should sit in his place and daven. In other words, where our Mishnah says that imeino yechol lired, if he can't come down, our Bright explains why he can't come down. He can't come down because there's no one to hold the reins. He can come down physically, but it won't help because there's no one to hold the reins of the donkey, and he'll have to hold on for dear life while he's off the donkey. So he can't come down, and therefore he should yeshivim komo vitpalel. And the rest of the Mishnah that says what you should do, you know, yachziot panav, and that it's missing from the Braita. The Braita just deals with the first part of the Mishnah. Rebbe Omer, and Rebbe is always Rebbe Donasi, the editor of the Mishnah. Rebbe Omer, bein kach u bein kach, whether this or that. In other words, whether you can come down or not. Yeshev bimkomo vitpalel. He should stay on the donkey and daven, even if you think you can come down. Even if you have someone to hold the reins, you still stay on the donkey. Lefi she'en dato miyushevet alav, because his dat, his mind, is not calm. And the idea seems to be, well, let's look at Rashi. What does Rashi say? She'en dato miyushevet alav. It's at the top of the page on the left-hand side, in brackets. Shekashe alav ikuv haderek. That it's difficult for him, the delay of the trip. In other words, even if there is someone to hold the reins, if you're forced to come down, have someone else hold the reins, and you daven, you won't have such good kavanah, because you're upset that the trip is delayed.
So stop right there. How does that make sense to me for just a second? I know, a priori, I know before going on this trip, ideally, I should be making time for tefillah. How can you not know that? I have to expect that time. It's not like, whoa, where did that requirement and obligation come from all of a sudden? Now I'm going to be late. Doesn't follow common sense.
You've got 10 hours, 12 hours. You have one city to another. You leave at dawn. You got to get there by dusk. I mean, you don't have much time to deal with things.
So that's the fundamental question. I mean, I don't have time to deal with things, or because I know that in my distance I will have to come across a time for tefillah, I make plans for it in my timing. I mean, how can you not know? Through your whole life this should come up constantly.
Because the Bedouins who are waiting to sabotage your caravan are not, you can't plan that. You can leave just before dawn. You got to get somewhere just after dusk, or you're gonna be killed. You don't have much choice. You can't plan your schedules ahead of time that way.
Life or death.
Crossing the desert. I mean, what do you mean? You don't have a choice. Where are you going?
In unforeseen. So you're saying that knowing there's time for tefillah is an unforeseen circumstance. I'm arguing to the contrary. In sane conditions. It's a known entity. I'm going to have this just as the same as I'm going to have to take a meal break at some point.
Eat on the donkey also.
Pardon me?
You're probably going to eat on the donkey also.
Okay, bad example. But the point I'm making is I think time for tefillah should not be a time for worrying in most cases. In the exceptional case, for whatever reason, there's known Bedouins, there's known attackers, there's known risk, there's a thunderstorm coming. But in most situations, I'm planning a trip under ideal conditions.
I think you're thinking of a case where if I have a meeting at 11, I know it takes me 4 hours to get there. I make sure I leave 4.5 hours ahead of time so that I can stop while I'm in Dublin. That's
kind of where I'm going.
You're dealing with situations here where time is not time, and hours are not hours, and you're just trying to get by. It's not like you have plane schedules, but within a few minutes you can more or less predict when they're going to land places. You got to get somewhere, and you kind of like saddle up your things.
So here's my thought. If I have a long journey, which is going to be pieces of day or several days of duration, I'm not going to rely on a Tel Aviv-Jerusalem trip to be a 45-minute trip. Maybe it's 3 days. And in that 3 days, no time for tefillah, no time for breaks. I will plan my life to continue, my obligations to continue on that multi-day trip. I would.
Okay. Look, so it's David is saying that in those days, in many cases, trips were dangerous events. They weren't common. And when it says in Rashi, "Kashe alavi kuvaderach," it doesn't just mean that you have a little bit of a psychological burden because you're going to be late if you stop for davening. It means that you're going to miss the caravan and you'll be stuck in the desert without any protection or something similar. As the kuv haderach is a more serious thing than what we're thinking of in our days. It's not just missing a flight.
May I continue this argument?
For 2 minutes, not more.
For one more second, the argument is the whole caravan ideally would stop for tefillah.
It's not a Jewish caravan.
That's a whole separate Mishnah.
No, but it's probably not a Jewish caravan. It's probably true. So you have a problem.
If I have, that's a whole separate discussion we can have. And we have enough detailed discussions, granular discussions, but if I have a Jewish caravan, I should make it my business, if possible, to take Eged rather than somebody else.
And Eged will have a tefillah break.
Yes.
The halacha is like a rabbi. Yeah. Rabbi says that he takes it away from the Mishnah. And he says, ease away, you don't have to get off from the donkey. You don't have to get off from the donkey. I mean, he's contrary to the Mishnah.
Well, okay, so let's go back to the Mishnah. I'm not sure about that, but let's see. Let's compare the Braita to the Mishnah. On the one hand, the Braita, instead of saying at the beginning, Eino Yechol Ered, explains a specific situation of why Eino Yechol Ered, because there's no one to hold a donkey. But it doesn't give us any other case of not being able to come down.
Yeah, right.
And then at the end, Rebbe adds a lenient opinion that's not found in the Mishnah that says, in any case, every case is considered to be Eino Yechol Ered, says Rebbe. We never ask you to get down. We always assume you can't get down because Ein Dato Miyushevet Alav, because he's not able to concentrate. And Rashi explains because of the delay of the Derech. So it might not be that Rebbe is arguing against our Mishnah. In a certain sense, Rebbe is providing us with another reason why Eino Yechol Ered.
Another extra prayer. We can pray even sitting on the donkey. Rabbi says we can pray there. We don't have to get off the donkey.
Right, so now Mishnah, when it says Eino Yechol Ered, one reason might be because there's no one to hold the reins. Another reason might be because Ein Dato Miyushevet Alav, because Kasheh Alav Ikuv Haderech. So in the end, I don't think we have to be certain that the Braita and the Mishnah are arguing.
Why they say halof karabi? Why he's openly against the Mishnah?
Well, I'm trying to say it's not openly against the Mishnah. It's not openly against the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, "You know, you hold your head, then you don't have to your head." And Rebbe is giving another reason why, in most cases, "You know, you hold your head."
You know, I could make a very simple stretch in my mind from here to using an umbrella on Shabbos.
Which is?
The whole logic of the convenience of the security says I can or should bring an umbrella on Shabbos if I need it. But, you know, I'm just looking for a metaphoric example from this context of being the AAA here to a contemporary situation. You know, I'm just trying to look for a contemporary situation.
But you have to... There are cases in which the halacha is flexible. But you're saying because in one case the halacha is flexible, that proves every other case is flexible? Between the laws of tefillah as far as getting off the donkey are flexible. Does that mean every single law is flexible? Does that mean if I'm on a donkey journey on Yom Kippur I can eat? Every case is different.
So, every case is different, to be sure, but every case gives me guidance in the generalities of the case.
Gives me guidance for similar cases.
Yeah, similar. Thank you. That's where I'm going with my thinking.
Okay, so...
As opposed to worrying about the details of every specific case.
So, is the umbrella case similar to the donkey case? No. One is Hilchot Shabbat and one is Hilchot Tefillah. One is the right and one is the Rabbanan, and et cetera, et cetera.
More than it's not inflexibility. It's saying you simply are incapable of doing it. Incapable of davening in this case. So, I mean, if you can't do it, you can't do it. I mean, it's not saying that because you know, it's hard for you to do something else.
Well, the...
You can't.
Well,
you can't.
I come back to my own.
You can't.
The category of you can't.
Yeah.
Is being stretched which way here?
If davening requires some sort of kavanah, that's a question. The Mishnah, assuming davening requires some sort of kavanah, your situation where you can't have kavanah, then you can't daven. In the same way as if you're in a situation where you can't do Shabbat for some reason. You're physically in a situation where you can't do it. then you can't do it. I mean, you can't say, then you don't do it. I mean, that's not a question of, if you can't, you can't. I mean, it's not saying, you know, you it's not like, so it's not saying, if it's hard, then do it some other different way. This one is saying, no, it's saying, do it if you can. If you can't, then do what you can. I mean, if you said, you know, if you're stuck in the middle of the desert, and you don't have a lulav, and you know, in Rosh and Sukkot, what do you do? Then you don't check a lulav because you can't have it. I mean, that's all there is.
This Rashi phrase has set me off. This Rashi phrase.
Okay, so that's what we'll pick up next time.
Okay.
Shavua Tov.
What will the next time be?